Absolutely.
Great. And so, just to kick things off, what were some of your earliest experiences with music as a whole? Not just necessarily dance music, like when you were younger and you realized music was something you wanted to pursue.
Well, I mean, my earliest memory was I got the Tina Turner album for Christmas when I was 7 years old, and that was just a game changer for me. Actually having, I think, I can't remember, I think it might have been on cassette, and I had like a little Sony Walkman and literally took it everywhere with me. So obviously with the passing of Tina Turner recently, it was so sad because that had such played such a huge part. You know, when I was growing up, my mum always had music playing in the house while she was getting ready for work or where she was getting ready to go out. So music was always massively a part of my life. I mean, I literally can't remember a time in my life where music hasn't been in my life, you know. So and then I remember, you know, saving up my pocket money and going into WH Smith or Woolworths, I think it was at the time, and buying the CDs. My first ever CD, so that was my first tape out. My first ever CD was Chakademus and Pliers Tease Me, and just rinsed it to death. And I remember listening to the top UK top 40 in the UK, and actually, you know, making my own mixtape. So when the presenter would talk, I would record stop. So I just have music. So I was actually making my own mixtapes by, you know, 10 years old, maybe even younger. And then I went to my first ever rave when I was 15 years old, and it was an illegal rave. And it was just a game changer for me. I was like, oh my gosh, what is this? You know, everyone, you know, because we'd get a number and you'd all have to meet in a petrol station, gas station, right? And then everyone, there'd just be loads of convoy of cars, and we'd just turn up at this rave, and there'd be like a Function One sound system and just everyone getting down. And that was me. I was fully hooked at 15.
That's super cool. And I mean, I like that one of the earliest things was making mixtapes. It's like the beginning of your curatorial thread as a DJ and a radio producer and a working at a record store. So you always had that mind for finding new music.
Absolutely, yeah, definitely. It's been such a huge passion of mine. That and kicks are like my two main passions in life, and I try and bring, you know, the world together. So yeah, from a very, very early age, I literally couldn't imagine life without music. It would just be white noise.
And then, so the rave is, because I know the story about how you had the turntables in like your family's shed or something, and so
Yeah.
the rave was the turntables came soon after the first rave, correct?
Yeah. So my mum wouldn't let me in the house. So we had a shed at the bottom of the garden. And so I had my vinyl in the bottom of the garden. I had my little setup, and it was like cobwebs. It was freezing cold in the winter. It was blazing hot in the summer. But she just didn't get it. You know, it was like both my parents were probably a little bit scared. You know, every parent wants their child, you know, to have this good education and good career. And I just don't think they understood it. And I entered a DJ competition shortly after I got my decks in my local nightclub and actually won. And then I went on to become the resident DJ of that club. I mean, literally playing to the bar staff like every single Saturday, but loved it. You know, that's how I learned the art of being a warm-up DJ, you know, digging for those records that you wouldn't normally play at home in the shed. And it was about 2 years afterwards that my mum was like, okay, you can come into the house now. And I remember having my decks on my mum's ironing board because I couldn't afford anything to put them on. And she was still like, oh my God, what is this boom, boom, boom music? And fast forward 21 years later, we've just created a space in our home now. We've called it the boom room. So after my mum. So yeah, so many pinnacle moments, you know, working in. My friends worked in record shops before I was a DJ. So I used to go in on my lunch break. I used to actually work for Vodafone on the high street, just as kind of like the 8210s came out. And on my lunch break, I'd always go in and see my friend. He works at Tower Records, and I just used to flip through records, and he'd give me like the promos that he got for free, and I'd just go home and mix them really badly. And you know, if I was at an afters, my friends would be like, come on, Sam, like jump on the decks. And I just really enjoyed it. I just took to it like a duck to water, if you like. And then I got my first job in a record shop, and I worked for free for 6 weeks because there wasn't even a house section in the record shop that I went into. It was just all drum and bass, jungle, hardcore, hard dance. And I was like, let me see what I can do. And I used to call my friends, and I remember putting the vinyl on the deck, like calling my friends and just putting the phone to the needle, be like, bro, you need this. And then run to, and then pack it up, run to the post office, ship it out. And then once I sold, I probably had like a budget of 100 quid a week or something. And once I'd done that budget, which I did every week, then I was able to buy more vinyl. And then eventually I got headhunted to Chemical Records, and that was insane. It was like the second biggest record store in Europe, based in Bristol. And I sat next to the drum and bass buyer, and that's, I mean, I was into drum and bass before, but literally listening to the music that he was putting out week in and week out, that has really cemented my love for drum and bass. And I literally had boxes of vinyl. I had unlimited budget. So going from 100 quid to unlimited, I mean, I literally bought thousands of units of everything. But what was really cool is that I was rebuying units as well. So we'd have like, a one-sided green bootleg. And then I'd actually have to get that repressed. So it was so cool to see that side of it as well. I also worked in a record shop in Naples in Italy. I don't speak Italian, and the people that came into the shop did speak English, but just having that kind of common ground of just loving music and just be like, see, no, and that's how that worked. So yeah, I mean, I had some fantastic times. I feel really lucky and really blessed, but I feel also that I created those opportunities for myself as well. You have to put yourself out there, as scary as it might seem. I didn't have a clue about working in a record shop. I just loved house music. So
So, in terms of putting yourself out there, it was attending, visiting the record shop so consistently and sharing the music, which is what got the attention of Chemical, just to
yeah,
clarify.
I don't even know how that came about. I mean, because I used to have a lot of distributors that I used to talk to in the States and in the UK and in Europe. And I think someone just put in a good word for me, and they just called me. And I was just like, I spoke to my dad about it, and he was like, just go for it. And it was a whole different ball game, a whole like leveling up times a million, but I really enjoyed it because I got to actually, see the music on the shelves, go out. I used to pack the orders on a Monday as well, everyone in the office, because the warehouse was below the office. So everyone on a Monday would all pack the orders. So I really got to know the labels as well, because I was like touching them, feeling them, and having to read. I was like such a train spotter back in the day. I also used to go to other record shops as well, around Bristol and around Cardiff. I used to love going in on Saturday afternoons and, potentially really my day off, and after I'd been working Monday to Friday in a record shop, and then go to another record shop on a Saturday. It was my lifestyle for many years. I played vinyl for probably for about 7 years. Before it went to CDs and then USBs.
Yeah, very cool. And so from there was when you started getting involved with Defected. I mean, I imagine when you were digging through all this music, Defected is a label that stood out to you very
Absolutely,
strongly. Yeah.
absolutely. Yeah, I mean, in my first record shop that I ever worked in Weston-super-Mare called Spin Central, I had my Defected shrine on the wall. It was all my Defected releases. And then after I left Chemical, I went and did my first season in Ibiza. And when I came back that winter, I moved to London literally with a record box and a suitcase. Me and my friend got a job at BBC Radio One, and she was like, yeah, I'm moving to London. I was like, I'm coming with you. And I actually got a job managing a record shop called Oatmeal Records in Notting Hill, and Aaron Ross, who was the A&R at the time, used to come in the shop. So I got chatting to him, and he was like, yeah, come to Defected, we've got this night at Pasha. And I'd been going to Defected parties in London anyway, and working in Ibiza my first season, I literally worked 6 nights a week, and my one night off was a Tuesday, and Defected was at Pasha. So I'd already been going for one summer anyway. Yeah, and got to meet Simon Dunmore, and was just hounding him for promos and hitting him up for guest list every week, and just kind of just got to know the crew. And in 2008, they basically offered me a job as street team. They kind of made up this job role for me, and it was to go around all the clubs on the island and service the DJs with vinyl, CDs, t-shirts, merch, etc. And then the next week I'd go back and write my little reports out. This, Cure of the Calls was played at Amnesia by, I don't know, whoever, and reported that back. And then in 2009, Simon basically offered me the job role as events manager for Defected in Ibiza, which was way out of my depth. I had no clue. I mean, I'd run parties in London before with my best friend, nothing on this scale. And again, my dad was just like, you're going to sink or swim, just go for it. And I hated it, if I'm honest. I absolutely hated it. It was so much hard work. It was absolutely exhausting. However, I really built a rapport with all my hero DJs. I got to warm up for them, like Junior Jack and King Cream, Bob Sinclair, Dennis Barrett, Kenny Dope, Sven, all my heroes I got to warm up for every week, as well as running the party, as well as artist liaison, events manager. So by the end of the summer, I was like, I don't know if I want to be a DJ anymore. I hate Defected. I hate Ibiza. I hated everyone. And Simon flew me back to London to play a Defected show at Ministry of Sound. And Kings of Tomorrow finally was like what still is a massive record for me. And I remember playing it and getting up on the decks, and I had like 50 of my crew in front of me and everyone singing back to me. And I looked to the side and Simon's just kind of like nodding his head but smiling. I was like, have I messed up here? And on the Monday, he called me and he signed me to the roster. The rest is history.
Absolutely. And we are very grateful to be to enjoy that the listening side of that history for sure.
Thank you.
So on a kind of broad scale, what do you think it is about Defected that has resonated around the world, you know, because that's the label where it's house music all lifelong. And I mean, even
Yeah.
as house music blows up in this very profound way through artists like John Summit today, Defected still has this undeniable presence that will probably never change, you know. So what do you
Well,
think it is about
I mean, Defected made John Summer, so that's how big that is. It
it?
was his record Deep End on DFTD that blew up John Summer, and no one can argue that.
Yeah.
Defected, like, blow up artists. Like, I've been with Defected 15 years this year, and Defected's like 25 years old in January, which is ridiculous. I've been with them more than half their time on this planet. But it resonates throughout everyone. Especially in the pandemic when we were doing our live streams from home and seeing, parents with their little toddlers and babies, with their headphones on and dancing around some music. I just think that it can talk to all ages. It's easy listening, but it's also one for their heads as well. If you go back through the Defected back catalogue, some of the most biggest standout records to date are signed to Defected. And I feel like combine that with the radio show, which I've been doing for 8 years now, is put me in places that I would never dream of playing. I can go anywhere in the world and I always have people come up to me and be like, oh my God, I listen to the radio show every week. Like, and it's just crazy from someone who started in the bottom of my mum's shed in a little seaside town that no one's heard of to be now selling out shows all over the world, and to be able to fly the Defected flag is an honor for me, and I do it with pride. I've earned my stripes. I've not had any help. Simon took a gamble on signing a female artist when no one else was doing that. I had growing up, I had no house inspiration DJ per se. It was all like hard dance or trance DJs that I kind of inspired to be, and then found my love for Soulful House and kind of never looked back. But so I feel like I need to be a really good role model for all these young artists coming through now, and maybe change the narrative of some of the things that I've had to endure. But I've done it, and kind of it's been a really hard graft. Like, I feel like I've definitely come from the trenches and worked my way up, but I've done it with a smile on my face and no regrets, no looking back, and I would do it all again in a heartbeat. But it has been really hard work, especially To not be known as a producer, to actually be known as a DJ and to still be able to do all the wonderful things that I've done in my career. For me now, everything's a bonus. I pretty much achieved everything that I've wanted to achieve, and to be able to say that gives me great, great pleasure. So now everything, it's like, yeah, it's just everything now is a bonus. So I do everything with pride, I do everything with joy. And I'm just so blessed that Defected have put me in spots that I wouldn't have even dreamed of. My first ever Defected international show, they sent me to Colombia. And I'd only ever played in Europe before, and I ended up getting stuck out there for 3 days. There was a big snowstorm in New York, and I was like, oh my God, I don't speak like any of the language. And it was so scary. I was like going to Russia, I was going to China, Hong Kong. So fearless. So fearless, but the music just was always my drive. Was always my drive. I never looked back. I'm always moving forward.
Yeah, and I mean, I love that perspective of, I've accomplished everything I've needed to accomplish. It's just this abundant mindset of, I've given myself credit for everything accomplished, and now I can just float through life. And, obviously the hard work doesn't like dip off. You're still
Yeah.
crushing
Oh
it
my
and doing,
God. Yeah. Thank you. I mean, it's now, it's to be able to sustain this level is the hardest part. I feel like the 21 years of, before have just been like a massive test run, and I feel like I'm only just getting started. I'm 42 years old. I've been around the block a good few times. I don't take any fools, for prisoners. And I'm just everything's so joyful for me right now. So it, and some people never get to that point of their career. So I'm just so truly blessed that I've kind of got my second wind again since the pandemic. It was obviously it was a really rough time for a lot of people, but in actual fact it kind of saved my life in many respects that that I'm a more healthier person. I wasn't as healthy before. I DJ sober now, which I never thought that was even possible. And having way more fun sober than I actually did when I was partying. And just musically, I got my decks out, I got my records out of my dad's storage and just started flicking through records again and getting ideas. And it just kind of made me realize how much that I loved music, because being a solid touring DJ for the last 10 years, it was getting a bit samey, and I was like, do I still love it? Am I still passionate about it? And the answer was no, I wasn't. And I was like, okay, I either need to figure out what I'm gonna do. And thank God, it was an absolute blessing that that happened for me personally. And I know, see, like I said, it was a very rough time for a lot of people. But I always try and take the positives out of everything in life.
Very cool. Very, very, a very admirable perspective, certainly, to have. Speaking of being a touring DJ, as I'm sure you're aware, for younger artists, the narrative so often these days is you have to produce. That's how you make money. That's how people
Yeah.
get your name out there.
Yeah.
And you are producing now, but the DJing and the curating and the radio, that all came before. And so what would you say to someone who's just starting out now, who's not really interested in producing, but is loves DJing? What would you say to them to in terms of how they could advance through the industry?
Well, I mean, you can pay people to make your music nowadays,
That's
so.
true.
And
That
a
is
lot of
true.
people do that. I've got an amazing engineer that I work with. Like I said, I've actually been making music for 10 years, but I've been very flirtatious with it. I just kind of want to put my name to records that I really love. And I'm a huge UK garage girl at heart. So I just always kind of remix garage records or just garage records that I just love, that I thought, okay, well, I can't play this in a house set, so I'm just going to make my own version of it. And if the thought of having to take myself back to school, or I've got a concentration level of a fish, so if I had to go for YouTube, I know many talented producers that actually just learn from tutorials on YouTube. So it can be done if you really want to put the work in and you are focused. You kind of not need to have a life, really. You have to be a bit I think you have to be quite a big nerd to be a producer. I've never had the patience for it. I'm like the hype man in the studio. I'm making cups of tea. I'm like jumping off the walls. I'm like, who's got a dog? Let's bring a dog in. And I'm just like, you know, I'm absolute vibes cartel in the studio. And, you know, I'm not ashamed to say that because I can't press buttons. I come in with an idea and I'm more on the side of arrangement and vocal. I know that I need a big moment in the breakdown. You know, I can't tell you what this sound is. I can tell you what a kick is, a hat and a snare. And that's about it for me, you know. But thank God that I've got an amazing engineer that I work with that does know all these things. And I'll be like, can you make this beat? And can we have that there? And, you know, and just magic happens in the studio. So as why I think it is in this day and age now to make records, I think it's super important to say to have fun and not to put too much pressure on yourself, you know. It's kind of like a make or break, I guess. For me, I made it as a DJ and not being a producer, although now I am a producer. And those times were different. But who's to say that you could only do that 20 years ago? Why not to say that you can do it now, you know? And but I think to be a successful DJ, a successful artist, you need to be the whole package. Mm-hmm. And fortunately with that, it does have to be production, you know, either a podcast or a radio show, live streams, you know, and have you got what it takes to go the whole way? So I think you have to also ask yourself that question when you're starting out. How badly do you want it? Because I was so hungry for it. I still am, you know, I've still got a fire in my belly for it 21 years later. You know, I grafted so hard, you know, I played for free. I was driving up and down the motorway, like at 6 in the morning. But you just do it. It just depends how, you know, I always say we're like machines, you know. It takes a different type of person to be an international touring DJ. You know, all my friends and my family like, Sam, I don't know how you do it. And I'm like, I honestly don't know either. I really don't. Ginger shots, that's what gets me through it. Ginger shots and Red Bull, that gives me my energy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's definitely a lifestyle. For sure. It's
for
not,
sure.
You know, I mean, I don't think anybody can be, I think even if you like, you personally like sat down a young artist and explained to them exactly what you've done, that still wouldn't actually prepare them for what the life would
no
be.
Way.
You
know,
can't hear it. You have to experience it.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Absolutely. I mean, even when like I take my best friend when she was tour managing me and she would be so exhausted and I'd be like, I'm ready to go again. Like, it's insane. Like, you do have to be like, I don't think we're wired up like a normal human being, you know. We've got some like superpower, you know. Last year I did 112 shows, one more show than Dom Dollar. And exactly, right on, Dommy. and it's a lot, you know. I don't go to the gym, I don't work out, although recently I have, because last year I had a bit of a burnout just doing back-to-back tours. I think I did like Australia, then did South America, then did South Africa, and then did North America, and I was just dead after the back of touring all summer as well. And my body just went, no, you cannot do this anymore. And I was actually really poorly, so I just made a conscious effort this year. I'm on a bit of a health kick at the moment because I don't want history to repeat itself. It's so important that we look after ourselves, you know, because it is grueling.
One thing I wanted to ask about is the curating, the DJing, the radio. You know, we mentioned this briefly. It all comes from this, like, this talent and this passion for finding new music. And I'm wondering, in today's digital age with Beatport and Bandcamp and promos through email, what are some of the ways that you like to find new music today, given all of your experience in that regard?
I mean, when I first started buying on TrackSource and Beatport, I started saving all my favorite artists. So, I mean, now I am in a position where I probably get sent 300 promos a week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it takes a long time sifting through all those because you probably only maybe get like 10 or 20% out of those. I mean, sometimes I'll be lucky if I only get three records a week out of like 300 emails. So it's very, very time consuming. And I'll just hear something and I'll Shazam it, and then I'll just go on a rabbit hole. I will literally be like, I want to find out every single record they've made. Who are they? Their Instagram. You know, I want to be fully invested in artists that I love. And it's super important for me to be like that because of my own record label, Divine Sounds. You know, back in the day when we first started it 8 years ago, I always wanted to have or give a platform to up and coming artists that basically didn't have that voice, and I wanted to be their voice. You know, how the whole label came about is that I found this artist called Curtis Gabriel. He was the first artist that I ever signed to my label. And I was just having a lunch meeting with my manager, and I was like, I was pretty vexed that, you know, this guy only had like 100 followers on SoundCloud. And I was like, by playing his records peak time in my sets, like, what is going on? You know, and we connected through SoundCloud, and he was just like, I just can't, like, there's no big labels or major labels that will even listen to my music. And I was like, no, we are going to change that. And my manager was like, so why don't you start your own record label and sign him? And I was like, can I do that? I mean, this is back in the day, 8 years ago, no one was really starting record labels, you know, so we had to do it. I started it with my best friend, and you know, we were winging it. We were like, fake it till you make it, you know. And but we did it right. We went to like IMS and Ibiza, we went to ADA, we sat in and listened to people who do run really successful record labels. And of course, Simon Dunmore, that was my mentor, so I could lean on him. But I always wanted Divine Sounds to be completely separate to Defected. I never wanted anyone to come back and go, oh, you're copying Defected, or this is a sound of Defected. I wanted Divine Sounds to be in its own lane. So we kind of like went down the more house and garage route, like more kind of, I guess, what you guys call US house. And you know, we signed some amazing South American artists, some Italian artists. Actually, I think at one point we had like eight Italian artists on the label. And going from my roots of obviously working in a record shop and playing in Italy quite a lot and having a residency out there, it was so much fun. And then pre-pandemic or just before pandemic, I just took some time out for it. I had 2 years out. And Simon and I went into partnership with the label, so it's now run in-house at Defected. Obviously, I still have the final say on music and the branding and everything else. And I just think it kind of gave it second win, its second wind. And you know, sky's the limit. I've actually got that tattooed on me. Sky's the limit, because it literally is. You know, if you put your mind to anything, you can literally, as cliche as it sounds, you really can achieve anything. And with music, it's endless. You know, it's like, sky's the limit, baby. Let's go.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, when you were in that winging it phase with Divine Sounds, how did your proximity to Defected, because I'm, how did that kind of manifest? How did that assist you when you were first starting the label?
Well, I mean, to you know, that was my inspo always. You know, I saw how the record label was ran. I did A&R for the label. You know, I ran their events in Ibiza, resident DJ, now their headline DJ. So I just took all the good things that I knew of running a record label. I just put that into Divine Sounds. And when you kind of look at it like that, it's so much fun, because I didn't have any pressure on myself. I didn't care. I cared for the artists about chart positioning, but I didn't care whether we, like, you know, whether we didn't have a number one every single time. I mean, we had many successes and many number ones with the label, but that wasn't our drive. We just wanted to put out really good music that connected, and build this kind of community and movement, you know. And I mean, I've got the label tattooed here, and there's like 13 other people all around the world that has this, you know. It's like it was a movement. And then we started doing events, and but also super mindful of Defected as well. I never wanted to cross over any artist, which is really hard, because Defected work with everyone, right? So it was really hard to have to find artists that weren't affiliated with Defected. But I think that's what also made it so special, and that we were in our own lane as well, you know. And we had, you know, in the early days, so much fun. And now it's, you know, now it's a business. Everything has to be a business, but also if you do it with your heart in your sleeve, then it's never work.
Yeah, and I mean the fact that you were able to create something that was separate from Defected, despite your history with Defected, demonstrates
Yeah.
that you have this identity and this reputation in the scene. You know, when people hear, "Oh, Sam Divine has a label, I want to get signed to that." You know, of course
Yeah.
everybody wants to get signed to Defected,
Yeah.
but it's like, "Oh, well, Sam Divine also has a label, and I definitely want to be a part of that as well."
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing that I took from Defected with the label is how much there is a family within the artists, within the DJs and producers. I feel like it's such a family vibe at Defected events, everyone's like hanging out and sharing their horrible travel stories, like, oh, how many flights did you have delayed this week? But it is a family vibe, and I think Croatia, for sure, Defected Croatia kind of brings that all together. All the DJs that it's like high and above, passing ships in the night. You can actually get to hang out for a couple of nights. I can actually go and see the DJs rather than, having to leave straight after my set because I need to get an early flight or something. I always try and get in earlier and then leave later. But it's, yeah, I think Defected Croatia and Malta is a perfect representation of, all the staff in the office run each stage, and it's just a massive family affair. And that's one thing that I definitely, put at the top of my list when I was kind of like building the label, of always creating this family vibe. I think it's super important. I don't just want to like sign a record and then never speak or, never have anything to do with that label. I want to get in bed with you, and I want to work with you and build up, and we can, step by step, as the Italians say, step by step.
Do you think there'll ever be like a Defined Sounds hosted stage at Defected Croatia or at Defected Malta?
100%. I mean, that's what we're working for. We only relaunched it in April with my first record with Hayley May, and I thought it was really important for me to set the tone on the label. Lead from the front. That's one thing that Simon always taught me, is lead from the front. And yeah, it was just important for me to put my own records out on Divine Sounds as well as other labels as well. But yeah, we're doing a boat party this year. We're already looking at residencies, Divine Sound stages next year. We're doing our own festival stage in September in London. And we were running parties before, and like we did ADE, we just did one in Miami. And it's just like a label showcase, it's so much fun doing Divine Sounds, putting Divine Sounds parties on. So yeah, we're just getting started with that. It's good to be back in the driver's seat. And there's a whole fresh new team with Divine Sounds as well. So I feel like the energy in the camp is like really big at the moment. I'm really excited to see, the next 8 years of what happens with the record label.
Yeah, and I'll be excited to see and hear as well, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wanted to ask about radio because you've been on the Defected radio show and have spoke highly of it during this interview. And I think that radio is in an interesting kind of place in the media landscape today because, you know, on the one side, you have podcasts, which are massive, which are essentially talk radio. And then on the
Yeah.
music side, you have streaming services that have their curated playlists that dominates a lot of the listening in terms of people who just want to show up and listen to something without doing the searching themselves. And so radio is kind of in the middle of that. And so I'm just wondering, how do you feel as a seasoned radio presenter? How do you feel radio kind of fits into today's media landscape?
I mean, it's so important. We break records on the radio show. It's having that outlet. I could go to a show and I'm playing to 3,000 people one record, but then my radio show has a million listeners. So, and all over the world, which is insane. That's stats. Like the amount of love that the Defected radio show gets is absolutely incredible. And it's so important for these artists to have just another platform as well. We can break unknown artists. There's been points where a record was going to come out on DFTD, and I remember dropping it on the radio show, dropping it in on my Australia tour, and I came back from the tour and I was like, this can't go on DFTD, this needs to be Defected. And then that artist literally blew up from that record, and I just remember playing a record in the radio show. We played it for like 3 weeks in a row. It wasn't even out yet, and I remember playing it at Ministry of Sound, and everyone was singing it back to me. And I was like, "How would you know the words? It's not even out yet." You know, that's really, really powerful, really powerful. And I think it's great that we have this platform to share new music and classic music, and to have, you know, featured artists on, and, you know, dig a bit deeper into artists' background that you might, you know, this is so and so, and he's got this record out, cool. But I want to know more about the artist, you know. And I think that's why our listeners are so invested in the radio show, because we bring them a new sound every week. You know, even before I was presenting it, Erin Ross was presenting it. That was my go-to Bible. That was my homework every week. I'd find so many new records in the Defected show that I would then be playing in my sets, because, you know, you have those crossover records, some just for streaming, and then you have, you know, the club records, and then just chill records as well. It's something for everyone. You know, you can just put it on while you're doing your house cleaning, or you can put it on a long drive, or, you know, kitchen parties, after parties, whatever you want at work. Yeah, I just think that the vibe of the show, you know, we've been perfecting it, and I feel like we're in such a good spot at the moment, and just our numbers at the moment is just crazy. So I am also very mindful that we want to be putting out good records every week. But also we have I have a feature on there called My Forgotten Gem. So it's good to have that nostalgic moment as well, you know, a record that I played in Ibiza, and it's a good talking point as well, you know. I try not to talk too much, but I can, as you can tell, I like to talk a lot. So the radio show is probably more actually like a podcast than a radio show, because I don't shut up in between links. But yeah, I've had no complaints yet, so I'll just keep doing what I'm doing.
When Tina Turner passed, was that one of the, was that the gem of the week on that show?
I wasn't actually on that week. I wasn't actually on that week. Yeah, I wasn't actually on that week. But I was like, God, I really need to do like a bootleg or an edit of a Tina Turner record. What's Love Got to Do with It? It's like one of my favorites ever.
Yeah. In terms of numbers, have the numbers for the radio show been going up since the pandemic, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my numbers for my show, I literally said this to my radio producer yesterday. I was like, what is going on? He messaged me, would had like some crazy numbers on the last show, and I literally just messaged him. I was like, what is going on? Like, they've just gone through the roof. And I think more people like to have that listening experience at home. So I want people, I'm very wary that people might be in the gym, or they might be at home, they might be relaxing with a glass of wine, they might be at work. So I kind of just have this tone. Someone once said to me in Australia that I'm like the David Attenborough of house music. And I was like, I will take that. That is like the biggest compliment ever. But it's mad, because when I go to my shows and people are like, oh, listen to the radio show, and I'll be like, oh, thank you. They're like, oh, say it again. They can't, but like, because they've only heard me on the radio, they've never actually physically heard me. It literally freaks people out. They go wild for it. And of course, I'm here for wild all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to put a face to the voice for sure. Cool. I just have one last question that's kind of a looking ahead type deal. And you know, you'd already mentioned that you're approaching your life and career with a lot of joy and freedom because you've accomplished what you've already wanted.
Yeah.
And so, in that kind of context, as you go out into the world, how does it feel to you to know that you could be the Simon Dunmore for emerging artists? You know, you're out here, you've accomplished so much, and now there's people looking at you the way that, you know, you were looking at him in that younger phase. What is that like to know that you could serve that same role for other people?
I mean, it's scary for a start. I mean, I'm never going to be Simon Dunmore. He's got like, you know, he is a veteran. I'm a veteran. He's vintage. And the thing is, I've been through, excuse me, goddamn ear pods. I've been through so much myself. I can only ever give advice on things that I've personally been through myself, right? And, you know, like I said, I'm a seasoned artist, I guess. So, you know, I kind of feel like I would have that almost, I've almost got like manager skills in me. I always want people to win. I want them to be the best version of themselves. And if I can help be a stepping stone, even if it's a small one in their career, I'm like a dog with a bone. When I find someone new, I'm just like, oh, it's so shiny. I want to do lots of things with you. And I think having that kind of female touch as well, having that nurturing touch as well, I think for me is super important. I'm always like one of the lads, but I'm also like the big sister as well, or the mother hen, if you like. And I can bring that to the table, and that's a beautiful thing. And like I said, I only ever want people to win. I only want them to succeed in life. So if I can help them in any way, like I said, even if it's just a little bridge or a little stepping stone, then I think that's a really powerful thing to have me, if you like, in your corner, backing you. I think that's because I just want to see you succeed.
Awesome. Well, I look forward. I mean, you've already helped other people succeed through the label and through the radio show, so it's not like this is completely a new thing for you, but I'm sure there's plenty of people who, and then there's the people who are just in that distant, you haven't met them yet, but you're playing that role in their lives too. That's, if there's a million people listening to the radio show, it's kind of hard to fathom that sort of outward effect,
I just think it's super important to always, give a positive message about life, about music, and music has saved me so many times. And during the pandemic, the amount of messages and people that came up to me in Croatia, I literally spent last year crying or smiling. It was so beautiful to hear people's stories and how that I'd helped them get through a really tough time. So I think it's really important, even when I'm having a tough time, is to still try and stay as positive as I can and just give the message that, love always wins, and house music is here for all of us. And I want to create that safe space for all of us to, enjoy and let our hair down and just have a good time and forget about, your week, forget about what's going on in your life. And I try and do that every time that I DJ. For those 2 hours, I just want people to just like check out for 2 hours and just come on a journey with me, And I think playing sober now really, really helps me to do that. Because I'm reading the crowd and I'm can really take people on a journey, and then like the last half an hour it's just like, let's go, party time. You never know what you're going to get from me for the last 30 minutes. It can be drum and bass, it can be hip hop, it can be garage, who knows? Just make sure you're there for the last, for the last half an hour.
If you're gonna show up at all, that's when you gotta show
Yeah, that's the most important bit. I mean, we have the peak, and then and then it's party time.
right, perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time, Sam. Looking forward to being in the crowd for the last 30 minutes.
Let's do it. Thank you
All right.
so much for your time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Ciao.
Enjoy.
Thank you.